dramatic changes in the last generation, including couples marrying later and delaying parenthood. That can mean difficulties getting pregnant, which is why there are so many fertility clinics and assisted reproductive technologies. Our guest, Judith Shulevitz, used those services to have her first child at the age of 39. Her husband was in his mid-40s. When their baby was about 3 years old, he showed signs of motor development problems. She began to wonder if his issues were related to her and her husband's age. Judith Shulevitz is science editor at the New Republic, and her cover story for the December 20th edition of the magazine is titled "How Older Parenthood Will Upend American Society." We were intrigued and invited her to join us today on Radio Times. And Judith Shulevitz, nice to have you on the show.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
You're 50 years old now. Do you consider yourself an old parent?
I want to say that I'm about to turn 50. It's
okay.
Very important at this age.
It is. Like, nonetheless, same question.
Yes, of course I am. Luckily, I live in Manhattan, where I'm part of the norm rather than an outlier. When my kids were really little, I lived in the suburbs and sent them to a Jewish preschool, which was an Orthodox preschool, where a lot of the mothers were 20 years younger than me, so that really felt odd.
Your article's about many, many things, and let me just start with you, because you write about the fact that your husband and you, obviously wanting to have a baby, did seek the services of a fertility clinic. Had you been trying to get pregnant and you just couldn't?
Yes, although I hadn't been trying as long as, in retrospect, I wish I had. But I was scared by the statistics showing that fertility declines very steeply after 35, and after about a year, I decided, you know, I needed to jump the gun. And I called the fertility doctor, and in his wisdom, he told me to wait. So we waited 6 more months, and then we went in.
And you did, and I hope your husband will understand that we're talking about his sperm count here, but nonetheless, you write about it, but you found out his sperm count was okay.
Yeah, his sperm count was perfectly normal. It turned out that I had a condition which was very easily taken care of by minor surgical intervention, and I never had to go. I'll just say what it was, because why not, if this is not too much information. It was just endometriosis. It's taken care of with a very simple surgical intervention. And the doctor, who I think was a very good doctor, nonetheless felt that I should take this drug Clomid, which stimulates ovaries to release eggs. And I did, and we got pregnant pretty quickly after that, and I was very happy. My son, I should say, has a very minor condition, and I would not have thought very much of it, except that I spent a lot of time in these occupational therapy gyms watching children with much more severe problems than he does. All he needed was, you know, some muscle tone work, some hand work, and that sort of thing. Very common. I actually think I might have had it when I was a child, but they didn't have occupational therapy back then. So what inspired the piece, though, was sitting in these little child-sized chairs, watching these kids come in, watching these older mothers bring them in, and just wondering if there was something here. So that was the question I set out to solve. Were there problems that had arisen to meet a new industry, the occupational therapy industry, and an over sort of a diagnostic establishment on steroids? So was this all not really a rise in anything because there's just more services available? Or was there an absolute rise in numbers of developmental delays and diagnoses of cases of autism, autism spectrum disorders, sensory integration disorders? And what I discovered is that while the diagnostic, you know, machinery is definitely in full gear and definitely accounts for some of it, there's an increasing consensus that there is an absolute rise in numbers. And then there's a big debate about why.
And let me just make sure our listeners understand that, which is talking about looking to see if there's a connection between some of these neurological developmental disorders or conditions and the age of parents. And while we are, I think, are much better at diagnosing things like autism or learning disabilities, your research is really trying to figure out, is there some correlation or connection between the age of parents and what looks like a rise in these conditions?
That's right. That's what I was trying to figure out. It's not my research. I'm sort of interviewing a lot of sociologists and medical researchers who are trying to do that work. And I should add that one of the difficulties I had with this piece as a journalist was finding parents to talk to me, because, of course, no individual case can ever be attributed to a cause like this, right? We never know. Like I said, I think I might have had fine motor problems as a child. I had atrocious handwriting. was always being, you know, yanked out of class to go work with somebody. And so it may be wholly genetic in the case of my son. We just don't know. Any individual case at this point cannot be, there's no ability to pinpoint, is it an older parent? Is it a drug their mother or father took? Is it genetic? We don't know. But because there's this rise in numbers, and because there's this rise in the age of parents, and because there's this extraordinarily unregulated fertility industry, people are starting to wonder if there's a link between these things and the rise in these conditions.
And I want to get to all that. You also had a daughter after your son, and you use, and this is a quotation on the radio, but use natural means, so obviously didn't use the services of a fertility clinic.
No. What happens, and I've met many women who had this, what happens is once you give birth, you're very fertile. And your doctor says to you now, you got to use birth control. and you say, are you kidding? It took me years to have my first child. There's no problem here. So I had her 18 months after he was born. And I was, of course, delighted because by then I was 40. And I had met my intended fertility goal, as they say in the demographic literature.
But I think, and having read your article, which is interesting and provocative and troublesome in certain kinds of ways, there's always that temptation, as you say, to try to extrapolate from one case or from anecdotes to a larger trend. But nonetheless, you did interview a lot of people, and they are, scratching their head or raising some concerns about this issue of parents' age and the possibility of some kind of developmental condition.
Right. I mean, so the most telling research is on mice, and there is no question that older mothers and fathers produce mice who are more anxious, more inhibited, seem to learn more slowly, and seem to have all kinds of neurological disorders and social disorders, if you can say. I mean, you can extrapolate a social disorder, right, how the mouse interacts with the group. So they're finding very powerful evidence from the animal world. Now, you have to be careful. Humans are not like mice entirely, though there's some things that do overlap. The attraction of mice is you can completely control all the conditions, strip everything else out except the age of the, parenting mouse. And so it seems rather telling. So that's starting to worry a lot of researchers.
But on the other hand, it seems that an older parent is a potentially more mature parent. Perhaps they've had a portion of their career, so they might feel, especially if you're a mom and perhaps staying home with a child for a couple of years, feeling more established as a person, more financial stability. It seems to me these are all pluses for having older parents.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's the irony of the whole thing.
Right.
There's a huge body of research on this. Older parents are richer. They have more resources at their disposal. They're more mature. They're more patient. They're probably less anxious, although I think in America, where we have very few subsidized services for new mothers, I think any woman who has had a career is going to be a little anxious about taking time off because there's no question that it's very hard to go back at the same level that you were when you left. And that definitely contributed to anxiety when I had my first child. By the time I had my second child, my daughter, I realized this is just the most joyous experience of my life, and I didn't give a darn anymore. And I wound up taking essentially 8 years off. I wrote a book in that time. And I'm very glad I did, because I feel that the children are very well established. But I think that's very, very hard. I don't think there's any time when you take time off, that's a good time.
But it seems to me that just parenthood and anxiety seems to go hand in hand these days. There's always something to be anxious about.
Yeah. But the thing is, the reason that I think we're better set up to have children when we're older has a lot to do with the way we structure careers in this society. So all the really hard tests you have to meet when you're young, come right around the time that you're in your prime childbearing years, your first job, making partner, getting tenure, all this sort of thing. I know lots and lots and lots of women who delayed childbearing because they wanted to make partner, they wanted to get tenure, They wanted to start and establish their own medical practice or what have you. Now, we're talking, obviously, about the middle class, the upper middle class.
Right.
So this is this sounds like an elitist concern that I'm raising, but I don't think it is, because I think the American dream has always been about getting into the middle class, and women who want to get into the middle class and want to have a lifetime of solid earnings know that if they don't hit these markers in their 20s and early 30s, they might be doomed not to ever make it into the middle class, because they have, a lot of studies show they'll have a lifetime of severely reduced earnings. So we have all sorts of incentives in place to delay childbearing to when we're not as fertile. And there are other ways of going about this, and other countries try this, to make it, to stop the clock when the women are younger, to subsidize child care, to have generous and guaranteed by law parental leaves, paid parental leaves, that sort of thing. There are ways to make it possible and anxiety-free to have children in your 20s and early 30s, but we need help to do that.
But are you saying that if that is a policy, and because of some of the potential problems of older parenthood, we should encourage parents to have children in their, well, let's say, late 20s, early 30s?
Yes, I am. I am actually saying that.
Really?
Yes. And the reason countries give a darn, the reason they actually, particularly in Europe, is that their fertility has dropped, their fertility rate has dropped below what's called replacement rate, which is to say people are dying at greater rates than people are being born. And they, you know, so their population is dropping, and they're worried about what's called a top-heavy society, where you just have we're about to move into that phase with the baby boomers getting older, where you have an older generation getting ready to retire, but you don't have a workforce coming along that can replace them.
We're almost up on a break here. One of the things that you found is that back in the year 1970, the average age of a woman having a baby was 21.5 years.
Her first baby, yes.
Her first baby. And today it's 25.4 years. So that's 4 years difference.
Right. And that was 2010. So it's probably gone up some percent, you know, some tenth of a percent or something.
So clearly there's a trend afoot here.
Yes. And another thing that's interesting, that interested me, is, you know, we're in a fertility decline in America in absolute terms. Still, of course, the majority of women having their children are between 25 and 35. You know, it's not as though the over 35 women are the majority. They're not. But we're in a steep fertility decline since the recession, which also happened during the Great Depression, in fact. And there's only one category of men and women who are having more babies than they used to. Again, I want to stress that these numbers are smaller, of course, but their numbers are going up.
Well, hold on to that thought, only because we're almost up on our break here. Judith Shulevitz, our guest today on Radio Times, her article, How Older Parenthood Will Upend American Societies and the New Republics. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Tate Weller, Certified Public Accountant, celebrates 90 years of specialized audit, tax, and advisory services to national and global nonprofit and financial services clients. TAITWeller.com. Tate Weller. Focus. Expertise. Results.
The Philadelphia Orchestra supports WHYY. The Philadelphia Orchestra and the music of Tchaikovsky. John Andrea Nuzada conducts Tchaikovsky's Third Symphony. And Alyssa Weilerstein will be heard in Elgar's Cello Concerto. Tickets at philorg.org or at 215-893-1999. This Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at the Kimmel Center, Alyssa Weilerstein and Tchaikovsky's Third with the Philadelphia Orchestra.
Celebrate the Jewish Festival of Lights with Leonard Nimoy and the Western Wind. Join us for a delightful and moving hour of songs sung by the Western Wind and holiday stories told by the inimitable Mr. Spock of Star Trek fame. It's Leonard Nimoy and the Western Wind in Hanukkah and Story and Song from PRI.
Tonight at 11 on WHYY.
The Orthopedic and Spine Institute at Abington and Lansdale Hospital supports WHYY and uses minimally invasive surgery to help patients return to their normal routines faster. To learn more about new procedures that use smaller incisions and for patient stories, abingtonpowertoheal.org.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. And if you're just joining us, I'm talking with Judith Shulevich. She's science editor at The New Republic. And her cover story in the December 20th issue of The New Republic is titled How Older Parenthood Will Upend American Society. In it, she draws on her own experience as a parent, she and her husband having children a little bit later in life. And she also draws on science and sociology to understand this phenomenon and its ramifications for the future. We're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. What do you think? Give us a call. Judith, I had to interrupt you because we were up in a break here, but you were talking about a group that the fertility numbers, I guess, going up?
Yes, the over 40s.
The over 40s.
But I should say this got sort of simplified for editorial reasons. So in some, so that is, of course, broken down by 40 to 45 and 45 to 49, and some numbers are going up, some numbers are holding steady, but no numbers are going down. And that is not true of every other group in America, including teenage births, which went down, according to the CDC, in 2011, from 2010 to 2011, teen births went down 8%, which is a huge drop.
Indeed it is. But your article, and you've referenced this earlier, is that perhaps you should take a look at fertility clinics and some of these assisted reproductive technologies, ART, as they are described. Do you think there is enough oversight? Do we know enough about how these fertility clinics work?
Well, the CDC tries. They gather data on outcomes, that is to say, how many women get pregnant at each fertility clinic. And they maintain basic standards. You know what they don't do, and this, I think, is a really big problem. They don't follow up on how healthy those babies are as they grow up. So nobody's really tracking that. And since this information is private, we don't really know. Now, that's not true in other countries where they have single-payer systems where all health and drug prescription information is sort of put into a single database so that you have these really good numbers. So you, in Sweden, in Australia, you have much better data. And it, the work, the really interesting work is coming out of these countries. And people in these countries are starting to worry about specific procedures. So there was a very important study that came out in May in the New England Journal of Medicine led by an Australian researcher who found that certain specific procedures seem to produce children with a much significantly, almost 50% higher rate of birth defects.
And what procedure is that?
So there's two. One is the drug that I took, clomiphene citrate, it's called, or it's marketed mostly as Clomid. Very common. Women pop it at like aspirin when they're undergoing fertility treatments. It's your first line of treatment. It's the first thing your doctor does for you. It just pumps up those ovaries and has them release eggs. And there's any number of reasons why it might be a problem. It may be that it's releasing eggs that the body naturally wouldn't release because they're problematic. It may be that it's producing hormonal changes in the body that don't go away as fast as they're advertised as going away and that build up over the course of several treatments. Now, you don't just take Clomid for one cycle. You take it for several cycles. And there's a fear that this stuff is building up in the body. And that could actually have an effect on, you know, the most important part of the development of a fetus, which is the first few weeks. You know? So that's one reason Clomid could be a problem. Or those are two reasons Clomid could be a problem. Another procedure called ICSI involves injecting in the IVF procedure, in the in vitro fertilization procedure where, you know, your egg is taken out of your body and put in a petri dish. Normally, there would be sperm in that petri dish and it would swim around and it would, you know, the best sperm would win and go into the egg. With ICSI, you inject sperm into the egg. So you sort of really jumpstart the process, and that seems to be associated with a very high, you know, a significantly higher rate of birth defects. And there are theories about why. One theory is just messing with that process, with the egg and the sperm, and handling it at that point might be leading to changes, what are called epigenetic changes, in the egg and the sperm that misdirect development. Or it could be that, again, you're injecting sperm which normally wouldn't meet the test of making it into the egg.
So is there a cause and effect? I mean, obviously anyone wanting to have a child or perhaps even using some of these services which you and your husband used or you certainly use, is there a cause and effect or is the science, the research not there yet?
It's not there yet. It's correlation rather than causation.
Right.
The reason we don't know the answers is we're just seeing the phenomenon and now it has to be tested. There's a bunch of other disorders that are associated with ART, assisted reproductive technology. They're very, very rare, and they involve even more, and they're not something you really have to worry about because the numbers are so low, but they are associated with ART, and they involve a whole other process called imprinting, which I didn't go into in the piece because, frankly, it takes so long to explain what imprinting is.
Well, NART is assisted reproductive technologies. We've been focusing largely on older women. What about older men?
Older men, so there's more and more research which shows that older men and their sperm are associated with neurological disorders. Schizophrenia was one of the first findings, that there seems to be a very powerful association between older men and schizophrenic children. Other disorders that have been associated are autism and bipolar disorder. And just this year, just this fall, there was a study published in Nature in which Icelandic scientists using new technology. So a lot of the reason these questions are getting asked now is there's new technology available to look at things. And they were able to see that men produce two more mutations in their sperm every year that they get older. The thinking is that these what are called de novo or spontaneous mutations in their DNA may be responsible for creating a sort of a brain architecture that is different from what we think of as the norm, and may be producing these effects.
Wow. So seeing a dramatic then difference between the sperm DNA of an older and a younger man?
Yeah. Seeing more mutations.
Seeing more mutations.
So it used to be just an association, and it was speculated that it had to do with these mutations and possibly other effects, epigenetic effects, and now they saw them.
So should we rethink fertility clinics, or does it need more rigorous research, oversight, evaluation?
Yes.
In
yes.
a simple word.
And we should. So it used to be. I mean, I think in a weird sort of way, for me as a woman, knowing that men have to start thinking about this, in a weird sort of way, that's liberating, because all the blame of waiting has been attached to women. And it's been viewed as a women's problem. Now it's a human problem. And there's something kind of reassuring about that, that we're all in this together. Men, the age of first birth for fathers has remained steadily about 3 years later than that for mothers. So men, fathers seem to be, you know, on average about 3 years older than women. They are following the women.
As women get older, men are getting older as well?
Yeah. As mothers get older, fathers get older as well. And it's a problem we share as human beings. And that I think might change the politics of it.
Well, and part of the politics is this notion of choice. And I think for women, whether it came with the birth control pill or other aspects of their life, feeling that they want and have more choice, more control over their lives.
Yes. I mean, of course, you want more choice, you want more control. But I think there's social pressures sort of pushing you to delay longer than you may have wanted to. So I say in the piece that the fact that we can now wait means that there's this whole new phase of life called the 20s, in which you discover yourself, you establish a career. Most people don't get married, don't settle down, don't even think they have to or should. And so then I think it's harder to wrap your mind around the idea that you're going to have babies, going to get married, because it's not the social norm. And I think, so what I'm trying to say is, it's not just women's individual choice. We are products of the social norms of the society around us. And I didn't get married till 34 because I didn't meet the man I wanted to marry. And I married the man I was born to marry, and I'm really happy. On the other hand, when I was in my late 20s, early 30s, it just never even occurred to me to get married. I wasn't worrying about my biological time clock. I was very happy sort of establishing myself in my career. Part of the reason I thought that is just everyone else around me thought
right.
that.
And now you want us to worry about it.
Now I want you to worry
you
about
want
it.
Everyone to worry, and you got away with not worrying about
yes,
it.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
It's not fair. But
it is
I
not
do
fair.
Think I was just a product. You know, in my day or in my world, if I had stopped in my early 20s and had children and actually spent time with those children instead of having them raised by other people, I think I would have been treated as someone who is not serious about her career by my bosses.
Interesting. Let me reintroduce you. We have some callers that want to join us. That's Judith Shulevich. She's science editor at the New Republic, and her cover story on the December 20th issue of the magazine is titled How Older Parenthood Will Upend American Society. That's what we're talking about today on Radio Times. You have a sense of where we are going in this conversation, and we'd be curious about your responses, your reactions, your questions. So give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. Let's see what Leslie from Kennett Square has to say. Leslie, go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you so much.
Hi,
Judith. I think this topic is, you know, so pertinent and in a way mundane because almost everybody I know in my life is sort of living through it.
Interesting.
I'm 55 in Pennsylvania, have a very professional career. Had my first child at 35. My husband was 37. My daughter does have neurological problems. I had my second child at 39. He was in vitro fertilization, took a brief break from my career, went back part-time working out of my home, and have since then, gotten back to a very professional job. So I've lived pretty much exactly what you are discussing and been through a lot of the issues. And, of course, I have a tremendous number of opinions about everything, but I did want to just raise
just give us
a couple
one.
Of points.
Yeah, just
yeah,
give
just
us one.
One,
Leslie. Go
just
ahead.
One of the points is that, you know, you mentioned possibility of social changes, like a paid time off, long, you know, guarantee of work, such as they have in Europe. And in my career, I have a lot of colleagues in Europe. I was recently at a European business meeting with, you know, a couple hundred of people. And what I can tell you is, at my level, at my job, in Europe, there are very few women. And in my opinion, it's primarily because of the social programs that are put in place that supposedly do encourage women to have babies younger, but when they come back, let's say after in Germany, I think it's a very long leave, they're guaranteed a job back, but I don't think they were taken very seriously. While in the U.S., we don't have such good possibilities to support us, but on the other hand, there's a lot more freedom. I mean, many women decide not to have kids. You see most women managers that don't have children. There are those of us who take a huge step back and then come back professionally. So it's just sort of a comment, but I mean, I know it's a horrendously complicated
it
issue.
It is, but it's an interesting...
No easy solution either.
No easy solutions, absolutely. Judith Shulevich, I'd be curious about your response.
Leslie is absolutely right. This is something other people have talked about, that with these generous policies comes a kind of implicit discrimination against women in the workplace. You don't want to hire a woman who's going to go off and get, you know, 4 years or 3 years of paid parental leave. Sweden's trying to address that by insisting on paternal leave. In other words, you get use it or lose it extra time, and it has to be used by the father. But I don't know the data on whether how well that works and how many fathers actually avail themselves of it. I think I agree that it's really hard to figure out what works. And what I am hoping is that with the new research on men, again, this is going to be reframed as a human problem, not a woman's problem, and that the male attitude might change.
That men have a biological clock as well.
Men have a biological clock as well. They have an interest in having their wives have children earlier. And maybe it will change. But I agree there are no easy answers, and there are a lot of societies in Europe, including, for example, France, which has one of the highest fertility rates in Europe because it does have these policies that are extraordinarily sexist societies, as we saw with the outcry about Dominique Strauss-Kahn. Very sexist societies, and, you know, so you combine these generous social policies, which are put in place because people are worried about fertility, not because people are worried about women and their emotions, and their feelings.
That's interesting. Leslie, thanks for the call. Let's see what Charlotte from Atlantic City has to say. Charlotte, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you both.
You're welcome.
I had my last child in my early 40s, and I'm in my 60s now, so which was quite a shock. My question is, years ago, you had women who were still having babies all the way up through their change of life. And many, many of those children were born that had no type of defects at all. My question this morning is, would you think that there's a possibility, maybe even small, that the possibility is because of the climate that we live in, what is going into the ground, what is doing to the nutrients and everything through our food, through our air, do you think that possibly that would play a part in the defects that are happening? Because years ago, women had babies, and the babies were born, and they were fine.
Well, Charlotte, let me see what Judith has to say. Thanks for your call to Radio Times. Do you think there's something to that?
I think that's a great, great question. I do. I absolutely do. And I talk about it a little bit in my piece. One of the things that happens with toxins, let's take bisphenol A, for example. There's been a lot of talk about BPA.
Right.
These things build up in your body, in the fatty tissues of your body, which just really, for some reason, cling to the toxins bind well with fat. And women have a lot of fat, particularly in certain reproductive organs like breasts. And the longer they've lived, the more time they have to build this stuff up. And there are a lot of, talk about unregulated. The chemicals industry is almost completely unregulated, and we don't even know what's out there and what's coming into our bodies. So it is, in fact, possible that the longer we wait, the more toxins we're passing on to our children and are affecting our fetuses in the womb. That is a distinct possibility. It may also be affecting men's sperm. Sperm count is down around the world, and it's thought this is because of endocrine disruptors, which are these toxins like BPA that mess with our hormones. So I think that's a great question. I don't know the data on the late in life children of women who started having babies younger. It's another point, but they do. There's another issue, which is they do reach what's called intended fertility. So at least there's that. But I don't know if it's actually true that they didn't have more problems than other children.
Well, let's take another short break. Charlotte, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Again, talking with Judith Shulevitz about a cover story in the new edition of The New Republic called How Older Parenthood Will Upend American Society. Stay with us. Call us 1-888-477-9499. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Lincoln, featuring a panoramic retractable roof on the 2013 Lincoln MKZ that opens up to over 15 square feet of skylight. Introducing the Lincoln Motor Company. More at Lincoln.com.
The Pennsylvania Academy of the Fine Arts supports WHYY. As part of a citywide celebration of Frank Furness on the anniversary of his death, PAFA is exhibiting architectural drawings of the Furness-designed historic landmark building. On view through December 30th, these rare drawings document the evolution of this historical building. More information online at pafa.org or by phone at 215-972-7600.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. A journalist crunches the numbers and decides for now not to have a child because it's too expensive, $1.7 million. There are questions about that amount and her decision. We'll ask them. Also, The Hobbit goes from page to screen. We'll ask a Tolkien scholar, does anything get lost in the translation? That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
Supporting WHYY, Trader Joe's, traveling the world to source a variety of foods and beverages like ready-for-your-toaster Belgian waffles, made in Belgium. Locations at TraderJoe's.com.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. People, parents wanting to have children are often told to wait until they're older and more mature. But now there's some research that seems to indicate that there are risks associated with having older parents, including the chance of developing a variety of neurological disorders. Judith Shulevitz and her husband are two of those parents. She writes about their experiences along with studies about fertility clinics and some findings from some researchers on this issue in the latest issue of The New Republic. Her cover story is titled How Older Parenting Will Upend American Society. Just one open line at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Judith, taking the title of your story, Upend American Society, are we talking then about older parents who might be having fewer kids because it's harder to get pregnant, and that the kids that they have more problems? Is this the upending that you're imagining?
It's part of it. I actually think there's all sorts of other things happening. I get into this really briefly in the piece, and it's worth more writing about. One thing that's happening is that the time between generations is lengthening,
right,
and fewer children of older parents are going to know their grandparents when they're old enough to really interact with those children in a sort of typically grandparental way. You know, they're not going to be available for babysitting, for spoiling, for passing on family traditions in any meaningful way. And I think that's kind of sad, actually. And sort of this lengthening of time between generations, I think, is actually going to have really huge mm-hmm. effects on passing on family traditions and on just the lives, people's lives.
But I wonder, too, because you just see families and the structure of families changing so dramatically. And I've always believed that, you know, people are pretty creative, that we can make families out of people that are not even our blood relatives.
We can, and we do, and we are brilliant at that. I couldn't agree more. But so I'm very fascinated. I wrote a book on the Sabbath, which was very much about the passing on of traditions and how these get lost. And it just makes me a little sad that there isn't going to be the same amount or quality of interaction among the generations. So that's something I'm a little sad about. Another thing that's worrisome and that people are starting to think about is that parents are going to die earlier in their kids' lives. You know, it's just obvious. You can't deny it.
If you're an older parent.
Yeah, if you're an older parent. And that has effects. There are, again, studies on this. And, you know, the death of a mm-hmm. parent when you're younger is just harder than when you're older. It may have financial ramifications. It may happen at a time when kids aren't financially ready to have their parents disappear. You know, with this new age group called the 20s, this decade called the 20s, people often need parental help well into it. And if their parents are more likely to die or to be entering old age homes during that period, then they may be more on their own. And I think I'm not saying that's good or bad, but I think it's a big, big change.
Something to think about. Let me see what Joel from Westchester has to say. And Joel, go ahead. You're on Radio Times. Hi, Joel. Oh, dear, that's not a good phone line. We will try to get him or get someone else on just with a better phone line. Judith, I'm curious about the response to this article.
It's been amazing. it's stunned me. I did not expect this. I'm calling you from Chicago, where I am on a reporting trip, because it never occurred to me to sort of stay home and talk to people. It's been almost entirely positive, I think that this is something that's been preying on people's minds and hasn't really been written about. And one of the things that I write about in the piece is how, in fact, every time there's some new technology that comes along that makes it possible to have children later and later, we celebrate. We think this is a wonderful thing. We think it's really great. And I'm just saying, I don't know if we should celebrate here.
We love technology in this country.
Yeah. So that's one of the things. So it's interesting that I take the exact opposite tack, and I have to say I thought I would be attacked for it, and I really haven't been much.
much. Well, we're not done with you yet. Let me see what Christine from Wynwood has to say. Christine, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, yes. I have some questions about the bioethical aspects of what's happening with ARTs. There have been many studies out recently that have shown that there have been problems with vascular resistance dysfunction in children, that there are increased problems with mutations and genetic malformations. And yet, many of the drugs that are used have never been approved by the FDA, not necessarily the drugs that are being taken by women, but the drugs that are being used in the process of in vitro fertilization. And it just seems to me with the advent of IVF and the industry for the co-modification of eggs and procreative rights, that people just think that it's their right to assume a burden on behalf of a child that's going to come into the world and potentially have a very serious lifelong problem to live with.
Well, Christine, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Judith, I'd be curious your response.
Brava. I mean, yes, exactly. One of the things that fascinates me, and I want to follow up on this because I didn't get nearly enough into it nearly enough in the piece, is culture media. There's starting to be a lot of work on the liquids that these, you know, this reproductive material is stored in, and what it might be doing to these eggs. What's called epigenetically, and what do I mean by that?
Yeah.
What matters, of course, it matters what genes you have, but what directs development is which of those genes get turned on and turned off. And there's a sort of incredibly complicated sequence of turning on and turning off at different times in development that is, you know, that is affected by hormones. So, and you know, what are called endocrine disruptors. So there's all kinds of things we're using that haven't necessarily been tested for their epigenetic effects, because epigenetics itself is something people have been thinking about only for about 10 years. So that's one reason all these questions are coming up and all these things are being rethought. And I think the caller is 100% right to worry. We don't know what we're playing with.
Christine, thanks for calling into Radio Times. And just to put epigenetically influenced traits into a larger context, so you've got big old evolution there, which of course has a lot to do with how we got here. But then, as you're saying, Judith, we've got these the influence of epigenetically influenced traits.
Right. We've got yes. So the question with epigenetics is, how do you get from a gene to a trait? Right.
Right.
So there's this whole process which is involves the environment. And when we speak of the environment, we don't just mean trees and air and so on, although that's part of it. But we mean everything that affects the body from conception on, because the genes are there, right, from conception on. And it's so it is, in fact, carbon particles in the air and toxins in the water. And food, but it's also age of the parent, and maybe these chemicals that are being used in ART that will affect how you get from gene to trait. And so that's what's worrisome.
Interesting. Let me get to, it looks like Mary from Chestnut Hill to join us on Radio Times. Mary, go ahead. You're on the air.
Well, I just wanted to say that this is a fabulous program.
Thank
I
you.
Have two sons who are ancient, one 45 and the other 56, and they both have small children. One just has a new baby. So I'm concerned about this. But one of the things that was stated was about, you know, the career interruption thing and how it, you know, might affect you becoming a partner in a law firm. And, of course, I'm of the generation that very few women were partners in law firms back in the 50s. And our career was considered to be, you know, motherhood for at least the first 6 or 7 years of the child's life. And that has certainly changed a lot in the last 50 years, 60
Indeed.
Years. Now, I must say I am a feminist. I went to college with Gloria Steinem, and I have long stood up for women's equality. But I think when it comes to raising children, I don't want other people raising mine.
Well, I understand that, but I also, just to add to that, I think, and we had mentioned choice earlier, it seems to me moms and dads should have some kind of choice in that matter. Judith?
I do agree that they should have choice, but in a certain sense, we don't have choice now.
We have choice. If you have money, if you have the wherewithal.
Yeah, if you have money, you can pay someone to raise your kids for you.
Right.
Lots of women, if you have money, you can, by the way, also choose to stay home.
Right.
If you don't have money, you know, you're really stuck between a rock and a hard place because you have to work, and you probably don't have a lot of money to pay for childcare, and you're just scrambling every day to figure it out. It's really tough. I don't think that going to work now is actually a question of choice for a lot of women. I think it's a necessity. I think it's a matter of survival. And that's one reason why I think we have to make things easier for women. They have to go to work now, and it's very, very hard. And so that's another reason to postpone having children, because you're just scrambling to make a living, and you don't want to be in a position of not having income for however many years it is that you have to sort of handle this very difficult situation and then face a lifetime of reduced earnings.
Mary, thanks for the call to Radio Times. But this is a more global question, but there's, of course, concern about the growing worldwide population and its effect on the environment, on food supply, all those important issues. Is there an argument that could be made that older parents and maybe even smaller families might be good for the world in the long run?
Yes, there is. I mean, it is funny that, you know, 50 years ago, everybody was predicting this population explosion, and that's a lot of books were getting written about that. And now population around the world is actually in decline,
yes,
in developing as well as developed nations. There are environmental costs to a large population, and there are social costs to a declining population. And I am not a demographer / environmentalist, and I'm not able to weigh the two different costs. But I want to point out, as people who do demography, which is the study of populations, that there are a lot of costs to not being able to reproduce your workforce and having, again, this very top-heavy society. And it's possible to have people without gobbling up resources the way we do. We're very, very wasteful, particularly in America. So you can affect environmental change without performing this natural experiment on postponing childbearing that I think winds up creating a lot of problems for both children and parents.
I know your article is about getting pregnant and having babies. You don't talk about adoption, but I'm curious whether that's something, it might not have made it into the article, but whether we should factor that into our conversation.
Yes. I mean, I wish more people would adopt than do. If I had found myself in a situation where I'd been trying for years and it just wasn't going to happen, I don't think I would have done the thing where you go, you know, buy an egg and, you know, hire a surrogate. I hope I would have adopted, because there's so many needy children out there. But luckily, I wasn't faced with that choice. And I can't, maybe I wouldn't have. You know, there's this urge to have a child who is your child, who comes out of your body. It's just very primal. And I can't fault women and men who don't do that.
Let me see what Whitney from Westchester has to say. Whitney, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. I just wanted to make more of a social comment than the medical section that you're talking about today. But I was in Europe, actually, in my 30s, early 30s, married, and couldn't work, but felt like it was just the right time to have fun. And then when I got back to the United States, I felt like there was an intense amount of pressure to get back to work immediately. I wasn't allowed to work when I was in Europe. My husband was working and I wasn't allowed. So when I got back to the United States, I felt an intense amount of pressure to get back to work. But then I also wanted to have children. And then when I did have children, I felt like I had to continue on my career path. And I was very fortunate for the past 5 years to be able to work from home. So it gave me a lot of flexibility to be a mom, but also a lot of pressure because a lot of juggling had to happen. I just, something just happened a year ago, just in my mind, that said automatically, I'm done with that. My kids are 10 now, and this is the time that is time to be home. And because I'm an older parent now, my children were born when I was 37. Now I have the wherewithal as an older parent and the financial means as an older parent. to be able to stay at home with my children. My husband can take care of our whole family. I don't have to work. I don't have to feel that social pressure that you guys were talking about a little bit earlier. Mm-hmm. And in addition, I feel like because of all the experiences that I have had, I'm able to be a better mother now.
Well,
and everybody thinks you have to be home when they're kids, but really, when they're 10, there's an amazing amount of pressure on them, so it's almost better to be with them now.
Well, let me take your story and see what our guest has to say. Thanks for calling into Radio Times. I mean, she seems like a lucky person, a lucky woman to have these options.
Yes, I think so. I do. I think it's. I mean, I'm glad that there's an increasing amount of flex time, and I too was able to stay home and write a book. I don't know if that was a lucrative move on my part. I definitely dropped in terms of earnings. I dropped from making a decent living to making almost nothing.
No money at all, right?
Yeah, because you know, writing a book is basically an activity you subsidize, even if you get a good advance, as everyone who writes books knows. Mm-hmm. But I was lucky enough to have a husband who could support me while I did that. And I just entirely understand, and my heart breaks for women who don't have that option. I think you are more likely to have that option when you're older because you have more financial stability. You're more likely to have a partner who can support you. And the other option, of course, is to just hire a lot of nannies, which was something I was really glad I didn't have to do because I wanted to be there for my children when they were little.
On that note, Judith Shulevitz, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you.
And she's science editor at The New Republic. Her cover story for the December 20th edition of the magazine is titled How Older Parenthood Will Upend American Society. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times to find out more about this program, including Facebook and Twitter, email, and the archives and podcasts. I'm Marty Moscoen. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times. Stay with us, though. We'll be right back. And stay with us for the second hour of Radio.